From PRI, Public Radio International, and KCRW Santa Monica, this is To the Point.
The politics of consumer protection. Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is To the Point from Public Radio International, a daily look at the issues Americans care about most. Wall Street's worst nightmare is a heroine to consumer advocates. When has a Harvard professor of bankruptcy been the subject of an admiring rap music video? Elizabeth Warren helped force a Bureau of Consumer Protection into the finance reform bill, but how much clout will she have in the future? Instead of heading up the new bureau, she was named today as a White House advisor, reporting to Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner, an occasional foe. Will she have the power to write tough rules for mortgages, credit cards, and payday loans? Will she ever be asked to enforce them? We'll hear more today on Reporter's Notebook later on, rallies in Washington to restore sanity and keep fear alive. First, here's the news.
Support for To the Point comes from subscribers of KCRW Santa Monica and from the Public Radio International Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and the Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs around the world, uncommon heroes dedicated to the common good. Learn more at skoll.org.
Hello again, Warman Alney, back with To the Point. After fighting hard for finance reform, how serious is the Obama administration about consumer protection? Why will Elizabeth Warren be a White House advisor instead of heading the new agency that'll make the rules for mortgages, credit cards, and other consumer lending? On Reporter's Notebook, if Glenn Beck can pack the Washington Mall, why can't Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert? We'll hear how a joke might turn into a political reality. First, this news update. As Pope Benedict XVI was making history in London today, British police arrested five street cleaners. Were they in an area where the Pope was scheduled to visit? Do they face any charges? It appears that the police so far haven't been very straightforward about all that. They have indicated, according to one paper, the Financial Times, that they were tipped off that there was a plot to harm the Pope, who, of course, is visiting Britain right now. And there are some indications, New York Times says that, in fact, the five street cleaners who were arrested were in an area where the Pope was set to visit. The New York Times also says they were of Algerian descent. We don't have any more on that, however, at the moment, and we'll look for more, of course, in the hours to come. President Obama today appointed Harvard professor Elizabeth Warren to be a White House advisor, reporting to Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner. Her job will be to supervise development of the consumer protection agency that she helped to make part of financial reform. Her many fans had advocated that she be named to run the agency itself. Damon Paletta is a reporter for The Wall Street Journal covering banking policy. He attended the White House ceremony today for Elizabeth Warren. Good to have you on our program. Damian Paletta, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, hello.
Good. Good to have you.
Thank you.
I know you're at the White House, and we're maybe having a little bit of a difficulty with the connection. In any case, tell us about the ceremony, what she'll be doing, and how things went today.
Sure. It's interesting. President Obama decided not to nominate her for a five-year term as the director of this new agency. Instead, she's been tapped to be an assistant to the president and a special advisor to Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner. So her job will essentially be to lead this effort over the next 10 months to stand this new agency up on its own, to create the infrastructure, to hire staff, and to essentially get the framework for this agency in place. You know, that's sort of controversial. The Republicans are saying that Obama is essentially ignoring the Senate confirmation process, while some liberal groups are saying, you know, why didn't they nominate her? Because we want her there for 5 years. What he's done is essentially sidestep the confirmation process, put her in place, but she'll probably only be there for a year or so.
Why do you say that? Why wouldn't this take longer? And at the end of the year, is she the one likely to be appointed for the five-year term?
Well, that's actually a really good question. So the law gives – this is part of that Wall Street reform law that passed in July. It creates the new agency. And the law says that the Treasury Secretary has to transfer all the power from the existing agencies like the Federal Reserve, the FDIC, that normally examine banks for consumer credit compliance. All that power has to be transferred within 12 months. So she has until July, essentially, to work on behalf of the Treasury Department to get this agency up and running. Once the agency is up and running and it's standing on its own, the Treasury officials and White House officials really aren't supposed to be, you know, managing its affairs. It's supposed to be a standalone, independent agency. Now, she could obviously be appointed after, you know, sometime next year to be the first director of this agency. And I would have to believe that depending on how she does over the next several months, you know, whether the business community softens up to her, perhaps she'll make some inroads with the Republicans, maybe she could get that nomination. But in the short term, you know, the way the president has handled this has kind of angered some of the business groups. The U.S. Chamber has put out some pretty negative statements in the last couple of days.
Okay, so he's getting it from both sides, from both people who support her on the liberal side and from the bankers and the Republicans on the other. Damian Pallotta, stay with us, and audience, hold that thought, because we now have with us John Burns with the New York Times in London to bring us up to date on what happened today there, where Pope Benedict XVI is visiting, where five people apparently were arrested. John Burns, good to have you on our program. What can you tell us about what's going on there?
Well, it's been quite a dramatic day. As you said in your newscast, Scotland Yard announced at midday British time that they had arrested five people. We now know that those five arrested were street cleaners. They appear to be Algerians, and they appear to have been employed in the Westminster area, which is it's the heart of political London. It's the center of government. And it's the center of the Pope's activities, even as we speak. This evening, they announced that they had arrested a sixth man. We don't know where he came from. But at the moment, it looks as though there may have been a serious terrorist plot involved here.
Are they charged with anything at this point?
They are not. They were arrested on suspicion of involvement in a terrorist plot. They can be held for up to 28 days under British law whilst the police investigate this. Scotland Yard, after making its initial announcement today, has refused to say anything. We, with our own reporting, have established that these men were employed by a private street cleaning agency with a contract in the Westminster District. Now, just to put that into context, this evening...
Quickly, if you will. We're almost out of time.
That the Pope has spent the core part of his visit today in the area where these people apparently were employed, around Westminster Abbey and the Houses of Parliament.
John Burns again in London with the New York Times. Many thanks.
To the Point thanks Factiva from Dow Jones for its use of Factiva.com. With news and information from 10,000 global sources, Factiva is a resource for companies whose continued success rests upon timely strategic news on their industry, competitors, and themselves.
Warman, only back with To the Point. As we heard earlier, a lot of liberals, progressives, and consumer advocates wanted to see Elizabeth Warren take over this new consumer agency that was created as a result of finance reform. A lot of financial people, a lot of Republicans, hoped that she would not get that job. The president appears to have divided the baby by appointing her to a White House aides job. Let's hear a bit more about what the president himself said today about what her role will be.
She will help oversee all aspects of the Bureau's creation, from staff recruitment to designing policy initiatives to future decisions about the agency. She will have direct access to me and to Secretary Geithner, and she will oversee a staff at the Treasury Department that has already begun to work on this task. She will also play a pivotal role in helping me determine who the best choice is for director of the Bureau.
Let me go back with Damian Pallotta. You said earlier that she might only be serving for 12 months or so and indicated what a difficult time she might have, especially if the Republicans are stronger in the Senate now than after the elections than they are now, getting confirmed to that job. But what about the reporting responsibility to Secretary Geithner? Hasn't she been very critical of him in her role as overseer before the Congress of the TARP program?
Yes, actually, she has. She was the chairman of the Congressional Oversight Panel, and actually, as I was walking back from the White House, I got an email that she has officially resigned that position to take this new White House job. But her job as head of the Congressional Oversight Panel was to scrutinize the $700 billion TARP program, and she was pretty tough on Treasury Secretary Geithner. I mean, she really had him up there several times and grilled him and second-guessed a lot of the decisions that the Treasury Department made. Now, I think, there were some reports several months when the bill was passed that Treasury Secretary Geithner had been trying to prevent her from getting this new role. We weren't really able to confirm that. We know that they had some tough conversations, but it seems like they both have been saying really positive things about each other lately, and it's my understanding that this process is supposed to be pretty seamless. I mean, the question will be, when some of these tough decisions have to be made about what kind of regulations to write and how to stand up this agency, and he has to, I guess, technically sign off on it, will they potentially butt heads, you know, in the spring, especially when we're looking at issues of, you know, if unemployment remains pretty bad and if there's all these concerns about consumers getting access to credit and new rules along those lines.
Was Secretary Geithner present in the Rose Garden when the president made his announcement? Did either he or Elizabeth Warren have anything to say?
They actually didn't have anything to say. The president stood at the podium, and Elizabeth Warren was to his left, and Tim Geithner was to his right. So they were all standing up there together, and you know, it was a very kind of friendly environment. The president gave her a hug and a kiss after his announcement. And she shook hands with Tim Geithner. So, you know, at least from the outset, it seems like they're going to be working together. And she will have a team of Treasury officials, you know, working under her, tasked with, you know, a lot of these logistical things that have to get done.
Damian Paletta, once again, with The Wall Street Journal. David R. Cush is director of the Congress Watch Division of Public Citizen. That's a consumer advocacy group founded by Ralph Nader. He's also a member of the Executive Committee of the Americans for Financial Reform, coalition of about 250 labor and consumer groups. You've worked very hard, David. First, David R. Cush, welcome to our program.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You've worked very hard in support of Elizabeth Warren. Now, how do you feel about the fact that she's not going to get the agency itself and will be, perhaps only for a year, be reporting to Secretary Geithner?
Well, it remains to be seen whether she'll actually be nominated as the director of the agency. She still could be. You know, there hasn't been any indication that I've seen from the White House yet that they've decided not to nominate her. You know, it is understandable that, you know, they're hesitant to nominate her right now. It would definitely be a tough fight to get her confirmed, and it would definitely take a long time. The Republicans have made that absolutely clear. I think that's a fight that the White House can win. I think it's a fight that is worth having. I think she would be confirmed. I think she would be strengthened by the experience because the public would get more exposure to her. They would see you know, who she is, what she stands for. They'd see who's against her. They'd see, you know, the big banks squaring off against basically the nation's, you know, most celebrated consumer advocate right now, and she would be strengthened. However, it would take a very long time, probably. It might be bogged down for a while. And if you want this agency to get set up right away and start doing its job right away, then it's actually a very smart move to appoint her to a position like this in the meantime and sort of kick the can down the road in terms of the confirmation fight.
What about Geithner and their apparently somewhat difficult relationship?
Well, that is you know, one of the aspects of this appointment that I think makes it appeal to a bunch of the groups who wanted her to be nominated as the director, is that the president has made clear that she doesn't answer just to the Secretary of the Treasury. She is also an assistant to the president. And I think he said in his speech she will have direct access to him. Now, the president is Tim Geithner's boss. So that sends a pretty strong signal that you know, she's going to have the president's ear. And that it sends a very strong signal to the outside world that this is not a setup where she is simply working for Tim Geithner within the Treasury Department.
Okay, David R. Cush again with the Congress Watch Division of Public Citizen. Bert Ely is principal of Ely & Company, offers consultancy on monetary policy and the regulation of banking and financial services, also an adjunct scholar at the Cato Institute, a conservative libertarian organization. Bert Ely, good to have you on our program.
Glad to be with you.
You don't have such a high opinion of Elizabeth Warren or even of the new consumer agency.
Well, I don't. But coming back to the last conversation, it will be interesting to see how well this relationship works out that was announced today. While on paper, she will have direct access to the president and to Secretary Geithner, given all of the many demands and different types of demands on their time, she may find that the access is really quite limited and will primarily filter through other assistance to the president and to Secretary Geithner. And it's going to be interesting to see to what extent she can function in that environment. Congress created the agency with a director that was meant to be very independent, too independent in my opinion, but that is going to be dramatically different than the role that she is stepping into at this time, where she might be kept on a very short leash, find it very frustrating, and I think it's quite possible that this will not be a very good experience for her or for the launch of this new agency.
Given all of the praise we've heard for her, from her, or about her, I should say, from the president and even recently from Secretary Geithner, why do you say they're going to keep her on a short leash? What do you know about what's going on in the White House?
Well, I do know, of course, that there have been frictions. You've already talked about frictions with Geithner, but also, as I understand it from reasonably good sources, with others in the White House. But more importantly, she is a part of the White House team now, a part of Treasury, and no one there operates with great political autonomy. And so it's going to be very different than what's envisioned for the director of this new bureau, who is purposely designed to have autonomy. And so she's going to have to adjust to the fact that she cannot just go out and say what she wants and do what she wants without clearing it with others.
Let me go back to David Arkush with the Public Citizen. What's your take on that? Do you think maybe that she's been given a job where she really won't have the kind of clout that you and others of her advocates have wanted?
Well, by all accounts, from everybody who knows her closely and has worked with her, she would never take a job where she wasn't going to have some real authority and a real role in setting up this agency. Now, you know, I don't have the kind of access you would need to know for sure how this is going to work out, and I don't think, frankly, anybody knows for sure. But the initial signs are actually quite good that the president is setting this position up in a way that's going to give her real power. She, for example, in contrast to the notion that maybe she's going to sort of have her office and not be connected to anybody and talk to anybody and not have really have much access to the president, it's also possible, for all we know, that that because the president, again, is Tim Geithner's boss, the president could say, for example, to Tim Geithner and to everybody at Treasury, do whatever she says, right? and, you know, spare me, don't come to me too often complaining about it.
Let me go back to Damian Paletta with the Wall Street Journal. Does this president operate that way?
Not really. I mean, we've definitely seen President Obama has been much more involved in the affairs of the Treasury Department, or at least the White House has been, than, you know, during the Bush administration when Treasury Secretary Paulson really operated pretty independently of the White House. But, you know, we haven't seen major decisions overruled by from Treasury Secretary Geithner overruled by President Obama. They've actually had a pretty close working relationship. I mean, of course, you know, we're entering a really difficult phase now with this debate over taxes and with this, you know, really tough unemployment rate that just doesn't seem to be moving. So, I mean, who knows what's going to happen earlier next year. But as far as right now, you know, we don't expect kind of a finger wagging from the president to Treasury Secretary Geithner. And as far as I can tell, I'm sure Secretary Geithner would love to have Elizabeth Warren, you know, take control of this so he can focus on other things.
Yeah, Bert Ely, what about that? Maybe this is something that Geithner would like to get out of his hair, or do you think that Elizabeth Warren has been a pain in the neck in the Obama opinion and of the White House, or the White House opinion?
Well, my understanding is she has been, and I think it's important to keep in mind that all of this is there are many, many political angles to this, and the political advisors are certainly going to weigh in on decisions and how various messages are pitched. So the idea that she would be able to operate with the type of autonomy the director of this new agency will have, I just don't buy that. Let me touch on something else that's very important here, and that is that much of the work to get this agency going is really going to be of kind of an administrative and managerial nature. Folks are going to be pulled in from six different agencies to work in this new agency, coming from established agencies, and they have to set up offices around the country. There's an enormous amount of really kind of boring, tedious difficult administrative and managerial work that she's going to have to do. This is something that where she doesn't have experience, and I wonder to what extent she's going to find that very challenging. Because I say it's almost unique to have a major agency like this created from scratch. It doesn't happen very often. So she's going to get bogged down in a lot of that. And that is going to be very time consuming and difficult for her. So that aspect of it certainly is not going to be much fun.
Will the people that you know, the bankers, the people in financial services, and the Republicans, for that matter, be watching very closely? Do you think to exercise some kind of oversight over what she's doing?
Well, there definitely will be that, and of course, in the legislation that created the bureau, and and specifically in these transition provisions that she's operating under, there is provision for congressional oversight. And of course, they can hold, you know, the relevant committees, the Senate Banking Committee and the House Financial Services Committee, can hold hearings anytime they want. And I think that it is quite possible. And let me add on to this too. If the Republicans can gain control of even one house, then they will, a Republican will chair the House Financial Services Committee or the Senate Banking Committee and be able to call hearings and call her up there, or at least try to call her there. So there could be some real political sparks on that next year if the Republicans gain control of one or both of the houses.
Damian Pauletta, back to you with the Wall Street Journal. Is that common in Congress that somebody who is, in fact, a White House advisor reporting to the Treasury Department, someone of that nature, are they subject to being called up for by Congress, which Senate doesn't have any kind of confirmation authority there?
No, I mean, that's actually a fascinating kind of thread to this whole thing, because by having someone that's an assistant to the White House, remember, there was all these fights. There's been all these fights during the Bush administration and the Obama administration about administration officials, not cabinet officials, but actually White House officials going up and to testify, and they actually almost never do. And also, they're not subject to the Freedom of Information Act request. So, you know, Elizabeth Warren is a very, you know, folksy, kind of charismatic. She's on television often. I could see her being very comfortable, you know, in the kind of setting where she's defending her decision and that sort of thing before Congress. But what kind of precedent would it set for her to go up there and sort of be grilled by Congress? And will the White House encourage her not to do it? It's a good question.
Okay. We're talking with Damian Pauletta of the Wall Street Journal, David Arkush of Public Citizen, Bert Ely of Ely and Company. We'll be talking with others in a few minutes, and we'll actually hear the rap video or a portion of it that has been produced in favor of Elizabeth Warren by those who hoped that she would take over the agency, not just to get the advisory job and structural job that we've heard about today. On Reporter's Notebook a bit later, competing rallies in Washington to A, restore sanity, and B, keep fear alive. We'll hear how a joke might become a reality. Tell us what you think on our To the Point Facebook page, and we'll be back in a minute with To the Point from PRI.
A complete archive of past programs is available online at kcrw.com/to the point. You can also order a CD copy by calling 1-888-600-5279.
Warren, I'll be back with To the Point. Elizabeth Warren may be the first White House advisor, certainly the first Harvard professor of bankruptcy, to be the subject of a rap music video. It's a slick Hollywood production, and it's called Got a New Sheriff, featuring Ryan Lumen.
Sheriff Warren's what we need, yo. Let me bleed, yo. She's not about the money and the green, no. She's about working class families and bringing out of financial crisis and tragedies. She wants to expose the banks and all the greed and get rid of unnecessary fees, which means more money in my pocket. Tell the banks to stop it if they think they're gonna make a profit.
Got a new sheriff.
That we need to start choosing an informant and make a new sheriff, Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren.
Okay. Remember, we're talking about financial protection here for consumers. Bonnie Abunza is the founder of Main Street Brigade. That's a group of Hollywood creatives who got together to support the Area Far Coalition and Elizabeth Warren. They produced this rap video about her, lauding her, as you heard, as the new sheriff of Wall Street. And Bonnie Abunza, thank you very much for being on our program.
Thank you for inviting me.
Why'd you do this?
Well, composer Hans Zimmer launched a philanthropy division, and I run it. And back in November, he and I were watching on YouTube Elizabeth Warren speaking at Berkeley, and she was talking about the coming collapse of the middle class if changes weren't being made. And we were just struck by the way she was able to explain the issues in a way that the average person could understand. And so we contacted her and found out that she was working with the coalition in support of the passage of financial reform, and we decided to support their efforts.
So did you do this before the passage of the bill itself or afterward in the hope that she would get an important position?
Afterwards. We started with producing with the team at Funny or Die two videos that focused on financial reform and, in particular, the Consumer Financial Protection Agency at the time. So Ron Howard, Jim Brooks, and the team from Funny or Die and The Simpsons came on board, and we produced two videos, one called the Presidential Reunion video and another one with Heidi Montag. And both of those videos focused on the need to establish the CFPA and to pass legislation. Well, one of those videos had over 5 million views, and the other one had over 2 million views. And so we realized that we were able to tap into the pulse of the public and get them to understand these issues in a way that the mainstream could. So when legislation passed and it became law, we said, okay, now let's continue and support the efforts of the coalition, and let's get Elizabeth Warren tapped to run the CFPB.
Well, now here's Ryan Loomis with Got a New Sheriff. How many viewings have you seen of that?
Well, on ours, it's been over 50,000. But what's interesting about it is that it was picked up by press, and it's on all these other websites. So it's difficult for me to actually calculate how many. But you know, we just received a call from the BBC this morning, from Fox News last night. We actually released this on August 13th, Friday the 13th, and it was produced in 3 days. Ryan wrote it, we shot it, we edited it, and because we didn't know when the president was going to make his appointment, we knew we had to get it out very, very quickly. And it caught fire. It's been all over Facebook, all these other websites.
I guess this is a very interesting moment, it seems to me, because we have a medium that in the past hasn't really been used for politics, and now obviously it is all over the place. Is this, as far as you're concerned, Bonnie Abunza, a first in terms of this kind of thing being done for somebody who is engaged in something as you might say esoteric as bankruptcy and financial reform?
Well, I believe it is, and I've been told it is. When journalists have called me and grassroots activists have called me, everyone's been telling me this is the first time that they've heard that a rap video or any of these videos have been used in support of someone who would be appointed to this position. So we knew we had to think out of the box in a way to get the message out to the public. You knew this is inside the Beltway issue. The coalition have been doing a tremendous job in mobilizing the activist community, and so we came in to see how we can tap into the public, and we were able to do it with this video. And what's interesting, of course, is Ryan, who did not know about Elizabeth. He's a TV sales associate at Best Buy in Long Beach, California. And my colleague and I were tossing around ideas. We ran the ideas by the team. We wanted a rap video. And she told me about her friend who actually loves karaoke. So we brought him in, and we told him, and he did all the research on Elizabeth and said, I have to support this woman. And he wrote the rap, and now people know who Ryan Loomis is.
And if you see the video, he's a pretty good dancer.
He's a very good dancer, yeah.
Again, Bonnie Abunza is founder of Main Street Brigade. And let me go back to Bert Ely with Ely & Company. You're opposed to Elizabeth Warren. I'm just very interested to see how you think the impact of a video like this might affect the Congress, let us say.
I don't think it's going to have that much effect on Congress. And the reason why is that the law has been passed. It's not going to be reconsidered anytime soon because it's part of a larger bill that the Dodd-Frank Act of regulatory reform, and so the law is going to sit out there for a few years before I think there's any tinkering with it. We may see some congressional hearings. Congress is going to be much more influenced by what actually happens, both during Warren's time as the advisor while the agency is being set up, and then once it gets going. And congressional hearings are going to focus much more on, shall we say, the operational aspects of the of this new agency, as well as the rules that it eventually adopts.
Bonnie Abanza, you've met and talked at length, I gather, with Elizabeth Warren. What kind of a person is she, and do you think she can rise to the occasion, having had a video like this done calling her the new sheriff in town?
Oh, I absolutely think that she can rise to the occasion, and I agree with everything that David said. I mean, Elizabeth is absolutely committed to strong consumer protection, and she's taken on this leadership role. And I agree with what David said as well, that if she didn't know that she could have real authority and that this wasn't just window dressing, I don't believe she would have taken it. I met her in December and have spoken to her a number of times, and you know, one of the most important things about her is that she's a very honest person. And when you meet her, you sit with her, you know, there's no equivocation on her part as far as principles. You know, she's out to protect the consumer. She's going to be our voice in D.C., and we're very pleased about that. And as far as Main Street Brigade, we will continue to support her.
Damian Paletta with The Wall Street Journal, let me go back to you. What about what we have just heard, this video? Oh, I'm sorry. He's not still with us. He's, I think, working on a story about what's been happening today. He will be back, I'm told, back on our program later. Let's, first of all, before we go forward, hear a little bit from Elizabeth Warren herself, not today, but in her capacity as the overseer of the TARP funds on behalf of the Congress.
When Secretary Paulson first put this money out into the banks, he didn't ask for what are you going to do with it. He didn't put any restrictions on it. He didn't put any tabs on where it was going to go. In other words, he didn't ask. And if you don't ask, no one tells. And so we have a system that originally put more than $200 billion into the financial institutions, basically saying just take it.
That it was in response, I believe, to the question, how come you don't know where the $700 billion in TARP money went? And that was her response. Bert Ely, a pretty effective response, don't you think?
Well, I think that as much as anything else, it reflects her lack of understanding of financial institutions and how monies can be accounted for. And by the way, most of the $700 billion did not get invested in the banking industry. Much of the money that has been invested in the banks has been repaid to the government at a profit. But I'd like to come back to something mentioned before about, you know, the role that she is going to play. She is in kind of an administrative role initially in getting the agency set up. It is far from certain that she will actually be the new sheriff in town, i.e., the director of the new agency. Begin because of the great difficulty in being able to get her confirmed.
David Arkush, back to you with the Public Citizen. What about the other point that Bert Ely brought up before we went to our break, and that is that she doesn't have any administrative experience, and yet the job she has now been appointed to is essentially an administrative job.
I think the most relevant point about it being a largely administrative job and setting up this agency, setting early priorities, is that I don't think we're going to see her do anything terribly controversial at first. So to some extent, this discussion about the friction between her and between her and Timothy Geithner, and the question about whether she's going to long leash or short leash and all those types of things, are sort of probably beside the point in most instances. You know, she's going to be hiring staff. She's going to be setting up an agency. She's going to be setting early priorities. The transfer date for the agency, it's sort of what you could think of when as the day when the light switch goes on and it becomes a fully functioning agency, is July 21st next summer. That's when the agency gets all of its authority transferred from other agencies that it's getting. And so I think the most important point is a lot of these, you know, major questions about how much power she's going to have and that sort of thing are a little off the mark. In terms of whether she's up to doing this sort of administrative job, you know, We have no reason to think that she's not, and we have every reason to think that she is. She's a highly capable individual. She is, you know, brilliant. She's an expert in this area. She knows how to, do the things that she knows how to do best herself and hire other people who know how to do the other things better.
Let me go back to Damian Paletta, who has now rejoined us with The Wall Street Journal. And I'm still interested in this issue of pop culture and how it impacts the Congress. We've heard this video, which is now being distributed all over the Internet, may or may not make Ryan Loomis a household word. Do people in Congress, do the administrative aides and others keep track of this kind of thing? Is it possible, particularly with somebody who is as forceful in public appearances as Elizabeth Warren, that it could give her some strength on Capitol Hill, even though there may not be any big decisions to be made anytime soon?
Well, actually, absolutely. And one thing that struck me, I was at the ceremony when President Obama signed this bill into law, and first of all, Elizabeth Warren was given a front row center seat, whereas folks like Ben Bernanke and others were sort of set off to the side. And also, I was struck by how many lawmakers came up to Elizabeth Warren and asked if they could have their photo taken with her. And, you know, we would see one lawmaker take a picture of another lawmaker with Elizabeth Warren, and they would hand the camera and they would take a picture of the other lawmaker with Elizabeth Warren. I mean, this must have happened with a dozen different lawmakers. Granted, they were all Democrats. It wasn't like Republicans were cozying up to her. But she does have a bit of a sort of a star power with this group. One thing we're definitely can expect is not to have Elizabeth Warren playing a major behind-the-scenes role here. I mean, she's going to be out in the public making speeches, being on TV, selling the country on this new agency. As a matter of fact, next week she's having an event with Treasury Secretary Geithner at the Treasury Department where they're going to talk about mortgage disclosure forms. So she's going to be a very visible person. The administration is really going to use her to get folks, you know, aware of what this new agency is, and she's probably going to be talking a lot in the coming months about what she's doing.
So, Bert Ely, does that make you nervous at all?
No, not at all, because this is the honeymoon phase, and then we get down to the hard slog. I'd like to touch on something that you got to a minute ago, or someone mentioned a minute ago, about the hiring of staff. That, in fact, is going to be a very difficult aspect of the job, because in order to bring in good senior-level people, that is not people transferring in from the agencies, but coming in from the outside, they want to know who they're going to work for. And they're not going to have much assurance on that point. And so what my expectation is, at least for the coming months, that you'll see career people slotted into some of these senior positions on a temporary basis, and maybe some other folks coming in for short tours. But until a new director is in place and confirmed by the Senate, it's going to be difficult for that agency to hire the senior-level managers and so forth that it will need to function on the long term. So we're going to have kind of an interregnum here of maybe 6 months to a year or until such time as a director is actually confirmed and in place before the senior-level positions are going to be filled in any kind of permanent fashion.
Damian Paletta, what about that? Is that the way Washington works? Would it be hard to get people to come to work if they didn't know who the boss was going to be?
I've actually heard exactly stories exactly along the lines of what Bert has just mentioned, you know, especially, you know, in these, there's going to be some leadership roles. This is going to be a big agency. There's going to be managers and folks, and they're going to want to know, you know, who they're working for. I mean, these are people that have been working. A lot of these folks have been working in the federal government for a long time. They have their pensions and stuff. They don't want to make a decision that they're going to regret. So, you know, I've heard that folks have been reluctant so far to sign on. Actually, it was interesting. The Treasury Department, I think just a few days ago, has circulated a list of potential job openings at this agency, and they were all for one-year stints at the agency. In other words, it was sort of people would only be signing on for a temporary stint anyway, because obviously whoever's going to be the new director of this agency is going to want their own general counsel, their own communication staff, their own top managers. So there is a bit of uncertainty, you know, in the short term about, you know, who's going to go over there and work.
Yeah, David Arkush, back to you with the Public Citizen. You indicated that you don't think anything major is going to happen for a while. But what about this question of being able to get the best people to serve if they don't know who the head of the agency is going to be?
I think there's definitely going to be some truth in that, and they might have to figure out a way to do their arrangements differently, right, to let people go on sort of one-year transfers, one-year leaves, that sort of thing, being loaned from one agency or that sort of thing. But at the same time, it's also true that, and I think Bert and Damian both know this, D.C. is a highly mobile city in terms of employment. People move around all the time. There are a lot of people who will take one-year positions or positions that, you know, they're not sure whether they're going to be in them for a year or two. If they're high-profile and if they're working with someone like Elizabeth Warren, who is, again, a superstar, both, you know, not just in the national media, but in policy circles. That's a job worth having for a lot of people who are looking to do some sort of transitional work for a year or two.
Vania Bonza, back to you with the Main Street Brigade. Do you expect to be further involved in this process? I don't suppose Elizabeth Warren's going to want to do a rap video herself, but will we see more efforts being made on the Internet of the kind that we heard today on her behalf and in behalf of this whole consumer protection movement?
Well, I hope so. I did say to Elizabeth that we are here for the long run, and if she wants us to continue to help her and certainly, you know, support the efforts of the Bureau, we are on board for that. And I do want to just add something that you asked Damian before about the impact of these videos on pop culture. All of the videos that we produce with Funny or Die and then this rap video, there was always a call to action. And our server crashed a number of times with people that were signing onto our website. And also we know from the coalition, you know, people would sign the petitions online, they would call their congressional representatives, and we did hear back from a number of insiders in D.C. that Dodd's office and Shelby's office and the president, you know, all knew about the videos.
The president himself or the White House?
The White House.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. Final question, Damian Paletta, if in fact the White House intends to push Elizabeth Warren forward in the manner that you have suggested, why didn't you say anything today?
Well, it's kind of interesting, and what the president did say was that she was going to be on the group or part of the group advising him on who he should pick to be the director. So, you know, maybe there'll be sort of a Dick Cheney-type situation where she'll end up somehow picking herself. I mean, I don't know. But it's just they really think it would take, you know, 9 to 10 months to get her confirmed. There's no way the agency could be up and running because if she's nominated, she really can't be involved in the process. So, you know, they really feel like they didn't have an easy choice here, and this is the one that they thought would be the best, but it's definitely already causing some, you know, issues.
Well, and if she doesn't speak on the day that her appointment is announced, what about Bert Ely's contention that the White House may be pushing her forward and burying her at the same time?
Well, I highly doubt that Elizabeth Warren, I mean, I've been covering her for, you know, a couple of years. She's not the kind of person that just got, you know, goes away and no one hears from. I mean, she's an outspoken, that's how she got to be known. She makes noise. She says things that the banking industry isn't comfortable with. She's kind of a troublemaker, and that's how she got to be such a folk hero. So, you know, we're going to hear a lot from her. She's going to be making statements. You know, they've already got an event scheduled next week. She's going to be out there in the public, and everyone's going to sort of get to know who she is.
Okay. Well, thank you all very much for being on our program. Damian Paletta at The Wall Street Journal, David Arkush at Public Citizen, Bert Ely with Ely & Company, consultant on banking and financial services, and Bonnie Abounza, founder of Main Street Brigade, which produced the rap video that we heard earlier with Ryan Loomis. Remember that name. Thanks, all of you, for being with us today. Since Glenn Beck drew a crowd of conservatives to the Lincoln Memorial, fans of Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert have been begging them to do the same thing. More than $250,000 have been pledged for Colbert alone. Last night, both political satirists said, okay. We'll hear about that in a moment on To the Point.
For more information about To the Point or to sign up for the free podcast, visit kcrw.com/to the point.
Warren Olney back with Purporter's Notebook on To the Point. Here's Jon Stewart last night announcing what he calls a rally to restore sanity, also known as the Million Moderate March.
Tonight I announce the rally to restore sanity. We will gather on the National Mall in Washington, D.C., a Million Moderate March. Seems like a pretty reasonable request. See you October 30th on the National Mall. Spreading the timeless message. Take it down a notch. For America.
Again, Jon Stewart. Stephen Colbert calls his gathering the March to Keep Fear Alive.
It is on October 30th on the Mall. Because now is not the time to take it down a notch. Now is the time for all good men to freak out for freedom.
Okay, I guess we have competing rallies. Dana Milbank often takes a satirical look at politics in his Washington Sketches column for the Washington Post. His latest book is Tears of a Clown. Dana Milbank, good to have you back on our program.
Good to be with you, Warren.
So they scoffed at Glenn Beck when he said he wanted to have a crowd on the Washington Mall. Do you think it's possible that these guys will actually put this together?
Boy, I sure hope so, Warren. That would definitely be the highlight of my autumn here. You know, it's Beck's rally was undeniably successful. You know, whether you take the low end and the tens of thousands, or in the hundreds of thousands of people, it really was an impressive thing. Not a lot of people thought he would pull it off that way, and he did it as these gentlemen are suggesting. With his message, which is one of fear. You know, people fear their country's being taken away from them, that they fear their way of life is changing, their rights are being lost. And that motivated a lot of people to come. Now, can you motivate the same number of people to come to Washington and rally for a good laugh? I don't know. I'd like to believe it's true. I am one of those million moderates. I suspect you may be too, but I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I think I could put myself in that category. And certainly there are a lot of people who might, you know, there's a serious point behind this kind of satire. Is there not about the state of America's political discourse and the kinds of policies that are being advocated and that sort of thing? Do you suppose that these guys who are satirists, obviously, and make fun of everything, might they try to make a serious effort out of this, or would they, because of who they are and the way they act on television and the way they've made themselves famous, just simply not be able to do that?
I don't think it's a choice. I think by presenting satire and bringing it here, I think that in itself will be successful. I mean, you have this Glenn Beck apocalyptic vision that the world is coming to an end. Now, I think, you know, when you come to his rallies and you're surrounded by people of like mind, I think the folks who are rallying out there really feel this is what Americans think. If these guys from Comedy Central are able to come out and, people may get the impression that, well, maybe we don't. The apocalyptic side doesn't necessarily speak for the vast majority of the American people. So it's a useful exercise, even if they're being completely farcical.
They, of course, appeal very much to younger people, the kinds of people who turned out for Barack Obama and now, according to the polls at least, appear to be rather unenthusiastic about the election. If, in fact, they pull this off, it'll be on November 30th, the Sunday before the election. Do you think it's possible that it could have an impact?
And as John Stewart said, the date is don't attach anything to the data. It's completely coincidental.
Right.
Well, you know, anything can have an effect on the election. It's not exactly, you know, you can't say these are the equivalent on the left of what Glenn Beck is on the right. I mean, he is a movement leader. He's in part a quasi-religious leader. Now, these guys are comedians. We identify them as being on the left, but, you know, they take shots at all sides. They don't represent a point of view other than sort of a sardonic view of American life. So we really can't hold them up as opposites. I think what the best that can be hoped is that people may say, in fact, America is not a land where everybody believes that the end is near.
Just to hear one more soundbite from one of them, as I indicated, these are competing rallies, as we heard, these are competing rallies, and Stephen Colbert, in his role, says that it's a really bad idea to have a march for moderation. Here's the way he puts it.
America cannot afford a rally to restore sanity in the middle of a recession. Did you even consider how many panic-related jobs that might cost those of us in the fear industrial complex?
Dana Milbank, I think these guys are funny.
Oh, they're terrific. And I guess Colbert is the, you know, as the counter-rallier, he is the Al Sharpton of this affair, which is terrific. And, you know, who knows, maybe we'll get Sharpton to come back here again.
So you then, I take it, will be writing columns in the Washington Post, the Washington Sketches column, advocating that this event take place.
I will lead the drumbeat to the greatest extent possible.
Okay,
We're
looking for a rap of music video from Dana Milbank advocating the million moderate march. Let us remember that there have been million person marches in Washington, and some of them have actually turned out a million people.
They sure have. I mean, you know, most recently, we had the Obama inauguration. It's hard to believe that was, you know, it wasn't even 2 years ago when the political fortunes of the political parties and the right and left were completely reversed in this country.
Things happen fast, and you never know what the catalysts are going to be. So maybe this will be one.
Well, I hope that you'll come to town, Warren, and we might get you some time on the stage there.
Might enjoy that. I could be the moderate moderator between
the moderate those. Moderator.
There you go. Dana Milbank, always good to have you with us.
Thanks, Warren.
The Washington Sketches column in the Washington Post, most recent book, Tears of a Clown. Today's program produced by Francis Anderton with Katie Cooper and Gary Scott. Our technical director is Phil Richards, managing producer Karen Ranziner. Email us, share your thoughts on our comment page, kcrw.com/to the point, and check out To the Point on Facebook. I'm Warren Olney. Join us again for To the Point, produced live and podcast as a co-production of KCRW Santa Monica and Public Radio International.
PRI, Public Radio International.